Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. Welcome to today's episode. Really excited to introduce our guest, Cordell Jacks. He's a visionary leader with a career that spans founding and directing social enterprises focused on public health, clean tech, circular economies, and social purpose companies. Cordell has been recognized with global industry awards, fellowships, and grants for his impactful work. And today, he serves as CEO and co-founder of Regenerative Capital Group. It's a fund that trains and invests in entrepreneurial leaders to acquire and grow Canadian small businesses with an emphasis on social purpose and regenerative business practices. And prior to this, Cordell held leadership roles and involved developing scalable market solutions for pressing global challenges. And in this episode, we discuss Cordell's journey, his approach to integrating profit and purpose, how he's preparing the next generation of impact-driven entrepreneurs, raising a $25 million fund, and this massive opportunity around $2 trillion in Canadian business and assets that are going to be sold over the next decade. How does this apply to climate change and the opportunities that exist? Stay tuned for an inspiring conversation on leadership, business transformation, and making a meaningful difference.
My career has been spent in dealing with what have traditionally been looked at as the most challenging market environments, whether it's selling toilets to people living on $2 a day or addressing ocean plastic issues or circular economy issues that seem like cost centers to traditional profit-making businesses. And what we found time and time again is there's actually a lot of value left on the table. Like, these are not cost centers, these are opportunity centers. And when you start to take a wider lens, again, an industrial mindset is a commodified monoculture or monoagriculture approach. When you start to take a multi-capital approach, what you start to find is stakeholder ecosystems that gather, that are more resilient to swings in the marketplace, that have less turnover in their businesses. And I think most importantly, as opposed to ESG and some of our other impact efforts in the past, which rightly so have been criticized, when you come in with a top-down approach and say, you must do this. You now must do business as usual and include environmental and social aspects. Those things become compliance tick box. Oh, you mean I've got to do my job and add these things? What you start to get is people that are aligned in purpose, that are bought in to a mission, that are showing up not just to feed their family and not just to maybe give something at the end of the day if there's something left, but are bought into a reason, a vocation, a why I'm here, how I bring my unique gifts to bear to the wider issues at hand. And that's where culture truly does eat strategy for breakfast. And that's where the magic happens.
Cordell, welcome to the Someone Like You podcast. I'm really excited to dive into Regenerative Capital Group and the fund and the core mission that you have. But before we get into the business side, I just kind of want to go to the personal side and just understand what got you thinking about regenerative capital and buying businesses to have an impact and purpose. You know, was it schooling? Was it personal experiences? Or, you know, have you been kind of dedicating your career to thinking about purposeful work?
Thanks, Marco. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on. Regenerative Capital Group is an interesting genesis story in that a lot of serendipitous events brought this together. So I started my career, I'm a boy of Winnipeg. I graduated business school there. And a year before I graduated, the largest financial services company in Canada at the time, Investors Group, had their headquarters in Winnipeg. And one of the executive vice presidents there was trying to stop the brain drain and set up an executive management development program. And it was kind of the top job coming out of the business school. And I received this job and spent 2 years under mentorship of a gentleman who has now become my GP partner in Regenerative Capital Crew 20 years later. And so to answer a little bit of your question, I went off and left financial services. I ran a social impact fund in Manitoba, really looking at blended finance and catalytic capital, supporting community economic development and other impact projects, and then spent about 7 years in international development. And that gave me a little bit of a flavor of creative finance. financing for really challenging global problems. And I was working in water and sanitation, a 2.5 billion person problem globally. In the meantime, this mentor of mine, my now partner, Mike Miller, he had also left financial services and he started buying small, medium enterprises. And in some of these businesses, putting friends of mine in place as the operator owner. And fast forward some 20 years later, I now live here on Vancouver Island and my business partner happens to live just 15 minutes up the road from me in Campbell River. He had had a successful exit of one of these SMEs and had immediately given away $10 million to philanthropy and was quite unfulfilled in the process and wanted to really involve himself in a bigger impact thesis. And so my friend who ran this company that they exited suggested that he look me up. I now live down the street. He'd hired me before. I'd spent my career in social finance and social innovation. And we started exploring what an impact thesis would be. And soon into this discovery phase, I said, you know, there's a whole ecosystem south of the border from beneath us here in the US. And all the Ivy League business schools and a lot of the business schools are now teaching entrepreneurship through acquisition. And they have these related investment vehicles known as search funds. And it's really blowing up. And the idea is really skip the risky startup phase, go buy a good established, proven small medium enterprise and take a good company and make it great. And I said, you know, that's what you've been doing these last 20 years. There's a name for it. And the ecosystem here in Canada is really just emerging comparatively. And so I said, you know, I'd like to build you a fund. I'd like it to be an impact first fund. And that really started us on the journey of what does it look like to support young entrepreneurs to buy these businesses and to evolve the value creation strategies beyond just bottom line capitalism. What is it? A lot of value potential is left on the table by not looking at the social, the societal, and the environmental impact. And how can we incentivize these entrepreneurs to evolve companies in this way? And that's what's brought us here to Regenerative Capital Group.
And so the thesis from the United States is that obviously we have this massive boomers generation and there's great businesses out there. Is it that they just don't have a strategy and a plan for, you know, what's that next stage if it's handing it down to another generation or selling? Is there just such a large pool of businesses that need to be sold over the next kind of 10 to 20 years?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Our fund really looks at the Canadian context first and foremost. And depending on the statistics you look at, there's somewhere between 650,000 to 900,000 businesses that are about to change hands in the next 10 years. And that equates to about $2 trillion in assets. The Canadian Federation of Independent Business estimates that about 91% of these boomers do not have a succession plan, meaning that neither a son nor daughter or an heir apparent in the business is ready to purchase the business and take over. And so in some ways, this is a really looming crisis for our economy. If we've got all of these proven Main Street businesses that have demonstrated their value propositions that potentially close up and be sold for assets, well, that's a big issue. But there's an even greater opportunity here, which is most of these boomer business owners who, you know, thankfully took 0 to 1 and started these businesses up, they're at the stage of the life where they're not going to burn the candle at both ends. They're more into lifestyle. Their risk profile is at its lowest. They're not going to invest big capital to grow the business to the next stage. And so this kind of confluence of factors really, as they call the silver tsunami opportunity, these baby boomers looking to retire, is perfect for these entrepreneurs who are young, ambitious, hungry, are capitalized with investors, supported by an ecosystem of partners who have been through this and can really take these good proven businesses. And these businesses are usually, you know, $1 million to $5 million in EBITDA. And it doesn't take much to really grow them to the next stage of development. And just to quote some statistics from the US, Stanford does a biannual search fund study. This asset class over the last 35 years has returned a historical average of 35% IRR. I think it's a 3.7 MOIC, a multiple of invested capital. And it just makes sense, you know, take a good business, capitalize it, put some energy into it and grow it to the next level of development. The challenge is that most of this history has been very bottom line capitalism driven, which means a lot of these good businesses are taken, grown, squeezed for profits, and then flipped, usually into the hands of strategics or private equity, you know, 6 to 7 years later, which generates some of those returns. Unfortunately, that hasn't always been a great outcome for our wider Main Street economy, for local economies, for community, for local stakeholders, or for the environment. And that's really where Regenerative Capital Group sees a bigger opportunity here.
Yeah. And so I guess thinking about this, you kind of have three pillars. I guess the first one is Regenerative Capital Group needs to have capital. So you need to get funding to raise the money to be able to buy the businesses. And then I guess you need to find and attract the entrepreneurs. And then obviously at the end of that, you need to find the businesses to acquire. So maybe let's start just with the capital side of it. You've been raising the search fund to be able to have that kind of capital. Was that the first step, or does all these kind of different pillars are working in kind of tandem?
Great question. And this is all kind of building this plane as we fly it here. So fortunate for us with my GP partner, Mike's Capital, he was willing to put in a good startup investment into this. And so last year we started this search fund model, and it's a bit of a search fund accelerator cohort model. We opened applications and we're looking for five acquisition entrepreneurs who are very values aligned with us and looking to make meaningful purpose in their career, not just drive quick return and an ownership model here. And so we opened applications up. We got 170 applicants. We went through a rigorous process, found five incredible entrepreneurs who have been working with us since January 2024. And that's really the first pillar of the model, which is you're investing in people first and foremost. You're investing in the folks you want to work with, in entrepreneurs who are going to jump any hurdle, regardless of the business that they end up searching and acquiring. Those entrepreneurs are funded for an 18-month period in our process. And in that time, they're surrounded with an ecosystem of lawyers, accountants, quality of earning, legal, all sorts of partners to make the due diligence process go forward. So they have 18 months to find a business. The business, really, we're taking an entrepreneur first mentality. Most searchers, when they go into a search process for a business, have a thesis. You know, they're going to focus their search within usually three industry areas, usually based on their past experience, their network, or a values play that they really want to go after. Despite that thesis, they often end up purchasing outside of that thesis, those thesis sectors, just because, you know, a good business has dropped on their lap through referral or otherwise, or something interesting has come up. And so that's why it's kind of an entrepreneur rather than business first model. And then the third pillar after the entrepreneurs and after the businesses is really that capital question you ask. And so we started with a large commitment from my GP partner, as I said, and we're raising our first fund, which is a $25 million fund. Happy to share that the Social Finance Fund of Canada has just made a large $5 million investment commitment into us as an impact first private equity fund. And we're about 17.5 of our $25 million raise. So we got some work to do to finish it off in the coming months. And that's where I say we're building it as we fly it. We're just closing in on our first business purchases, and all of this is happening in tandem.
So you do this application process, you're finding these incredible entrepreneurs that have alignment with your guys' thesis. And what does it look like on the other end? So you're close to, or maybe you're working on kind of your first acquisitions, but I'm sure if you're getting to that point, you mean you've probably had many, many conversations to try to find different companies to buy. And I completely understand that somebody that is running a successful company, but is kind of at that tail end or sales end, is probably not spending a lot of money on innovation, on impact, on what's that next kind of step. That's a lot of work, a lot of dedication to become B Corp certified. I couldn't see somebody on the edge of retiring saying, I want to do this for these type of reasonings. And so what would be like an ideal acquisition? And then like, what would be the aim and the impact that you would try to instill into that business so that it is an impactful thing to society, also into the environment? Do you have any examples?
I think what an ideal acquisition is, I think we have to take a step back and really look at the macro picture of like, what's the temperature? What's going on in the world? And I think as many of us know, you know, we're dealing with polycrisis, we're dealing with degraded biosphere, we're dealing with widespread mental health crisis, we're dealing with climate change, we're dealing with, you know, name it, ocean plastics, all of these interconnected issues. And most of them are interconnected in how our capitalist democratic society works. And so from the highest level, we need to figure out as a species how to align our economy with our ecology. I have spent my entire career in impact finance and innovation. As I've said, from CSR, corporate social responsibility, to Michael Porter's Creating Shared Value. We won the first award at our NGO there, to ESG, MDGs, Sustainable Development Goals, B Corp certifications. All of these have been, how do we figure out how best to use business as a force for good here. And ultimately, in aligning our economy with our ecology, that's where the regenerative and regenerative capital group comes in. You know, when we started building this thesis, we were saying, what do we want to do with these businesses? What is the nature of evolution of the SME economy that we need to see here? And quite frankly, we entertain, do we B Corp each of these acquisitions? That's a great first step for us. And ultimately, you know, we did a lot of deep thinking, and during this time, we're turned on to the regenerative business movement. And the regenerative business movement is this tough movement to explain, because to tackle the poly crisis, we need to tackle the meta crisis, which means the way we're thinking about business, the way we're thinking about economies. Most of our economies have developed from an industrial mindset. You know, industrial revolution, we figured out machines, we figured out commodification, we figured out machine logic, and with that came machine logic. Unfortunately, you know, as we know, that came at the cost of externalities, environment, social good, a lot of other things that we're trying to address now. Regenerative business really tries to take a deep change perspective in aligning business strategy with living system principles. How do we take the 13.8 billion years of evolution that has come before us, that has demonstrated, you know, thriving interdependency, complexity, resiliency, continued growth in these different yet sustainable ways? And how do we apply that to the logic of value exchange beyond bottom line capitalism? And so really what we're looking at is, first and foremost, training our entrepreneurs in a regenerative business mindset. And that's not a quick training. That's an ongoing process of development and design within the life cycle of them working with us. When it comes to an ideal acquisition, you know, there are definitively areas we do not play in, but we give a lot of leeway to these entrepreneurs. You know, we want them to find businesses that they're going to be obsessively passionate about running and that are great businesses and great platforms to demonstrate systemic catalyzation within their industries, within their stakeholder ecosystems, that being their employees, their clients, their value chain partners, their communities, any material environmental touch points that they might have. Where do they ultimately take this new chapter and new ownership of a business and really align across three principles? You know, what is the place-based context of the business? How is it connected to earth, people, place in its region or its bioregion? What is the legacy culture these entrepreneurs are inheriting? What is the people-based context, and where is the gravitational pull of what they want to use this business as a platform to addressing these wider systemic issues with? And then ultimately, how do those things come together to create a renewed purpose that, again, we buy these businesses because they're great, good, cash flow positive businesses, but we know the riskiest thing we can do going forward is business as usual. So how do they come together as a stakeholder ecosystem and start to decide where they are going to start to address some of these bigger issues? And that's really where the magic happens. That's where you start to get impact value creation as not an addendum or an add-on to the business, but as a core value strategy of the business.
I wanted to take a second to tell you about our season two sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers us readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are three new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter-signup. Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. When you are acquiring these businesses, and sounds like a lot of the ones that you're looking at are quite established, they have profit. So that means obviously they've made them sustainable, in not the instance of sustainability when we're talking about environmentalism, but sustainable as in they're able to pay their people, they're able to continue on. To make big changes is always kind of a bit of uncertainty. You don't know how that's going to be reacted. So what do you think, or why do you believe that these changes will help the businesses from a customer getting more customers and from like a marketing perspective? Like, why do you believe that making these changes and having an impact and having this regenerative mindset will ultimately do good for the business? Why do you think there's an idea that it'll do better?
Yeah, I think that's the $1 million or maybe $1 billion question. You know, my career has been spent in dealing with what have traditionally been looked at as the most challenging market environments, whether it's selling toilets to people living on $2 a day or addressing ocean plastic issues or circular economy issues that seem like cost centers to traditional profit-making businesses. And what we found time and time again, and I'm sure you're finding this as you walk through the 150 metrics that matter journey as a B Corp, is there's actually a lot of value left on the table. Like, these are not cost centers, these are opportunity centers. And when you start to take a wider lens, again, an industrial mindset is a commodified monoculture or monoagriculture approach. When you start to take a multi-capital approach, what you start to find is stakeholder ecosystems that gather, that are more resilient to swings in the marketplace, that have less turnover in their businesses. And I think most importantly, as opposed to ESG and some of our other impact efforts in the past, which rightly so have been criticized, when you come in with a top-down approach and say, you must do this, you now must do business as usual and include environmental and social aspects, those things become compliance tick box. Oh, you mean I've got to do my job and add these things? That's really a colonial top-down approach and usually ends up being kicked around as it is. When you start to align people and say, hey, do we realize some of the bigger issues that we need to solve in our time here? What can we do? How do we mutually co-decide what that is? What you start to get is people that are aligned in purpose, that are bought in to a mission, that are showing up not just to feed their family and not just to maybe give something at the end of the day if there's something left, but are bought into a reason, a vocation, a why I'm here, how I bring my unique gifts to bear to the wider issues at hand. And that's where culture truly does eat strategy for breakfast. And that's where the magic happens. And that quickly ripples out, not just within the business, but within the industry, within the ecosystem, within partners, and our experience as GPs. And then the benefit of that is really profitable.
Yeah, I think purpose and profit, and what we have seen also is that both of those can be in tandem. And, you know, things like B Corp and diving into these or understanding, putting in new technology. And what it ends up doing is we've noticed is that we've been able to attract better employees, better partners, better opportunities. And you start to see it. It doesn't come immediately, but you start to see that benefit in thinking about business a bit differently. And ironically, it typically does sometimes lead to more profit and more sustainability of the business. And it's such a beautiful flywheel when it all works. But thinking about you on the entrepreneurship side and the entrepreneurs, like, what kind of DNA are you finding for these entrepreneurs in their past careers that have them kind of aligned with your thinking around regenerative capital?
Yeah, it's a great question. And just before I answer that, I want to just say to what you were just saying, dovetailing off that, all of us are getting blasted with these existential issues in our phones, in our computers, in our daily life. Like, we know there's stuff going on that we've got to address. And so I truly believe that most people do want to serve a greater purpose than just feeding their families when they can, or self-righteous reasons for that. And so, like you said, I think there's just a core desire to be in service in these times of change and challenge. You know, when it comes to these entrepreneurs, I'll say it was incredible to have the 170 applicants that we did, because first of all, I think they all had the chops to lead a business. They all had, you know, business training, they all had leadership positions, they all had P&L responsibilities. I think what it came down to, and we invested, this was almost 4 months of time in what was a rigorous application process. We tried to be as inclusive as possible because, unfortunately, in the search fund ecosystem in the US, the history has been predominantly white male investment banking, private equity, management consulting type folks. And we know it doesn't take any of those pedigrees to be a good entrepreneur, let alone a great entrepreneur with a great business platform. And so we didn't want to recreate the wheel here in Canada. We kind of wanted to take a better step forward in that. When it came down down to it, we brought our 12 finalists together for 6 days together on Niagara-on-the-Lake. It was a giant expense on our part, but we wanted to spend a week with these folks. They had all made it through all of the hoops we made them jump through to get to that level, because we were certain any one of them could be great business partners and leaders of an SME. But it truly came down to a lot of their individual core purposes and stories. We are going to invest tens of millions of dollars in you over your career. We are going to give you the best platform we can possibly imagine to make systemic change towards these bigger issues and to be profitable in doing that. How is this going to fit? How are we going to work together? Is this the right play and is this the right fit? You know, are we the right partners for you? Are you the right partner for us? And again, we came to five incredible individuals, and they had all the traditional entrepreneurial grit, talent, ambition, learner's mindset, all of these things. But it truly came down to alignment around the bigger context in which we're playing and what we're trying to do here, not just from proving a profitable fund, but truly demonstrating a new model towards what we think is the biggest lever here, which is, again, the silver tsunami. If the majority of our economy is small, medium enterprises, this is the perfect inflection point to evolve these businesses, evolve the economy. And this is where all the hearts and minds are. So to support them in this regenerative mindset.
And I think that those type of entrepreneurs, they want to see that. And to be able to do that with you and alongside you with that expertise is obviously incredibly empowering. And so you're very well positioned to answer this question because of your past experience too. Is a lot of people always that back and forth between business and not for our profits, and can businesses actually be a force for good, because businesses are the ones that caused us, you know, to be in this kind of climate area now. What would you say to, you know, somebody that kind of asks that type of question?
I think it's a good question that a lot of people are asking right now. I should say our economy and our structuring and our capitalism has gotten us into a lot of these issues. And although we've been trying for the last good 30, 40 years to use business as a force for good, I think we've used, it's kind of that old Einstein quote, you can't use the same mindset that got you into these problems to get you out. I think we're using a lot of our industrial mindset and business as usual mindset with addendums of impact, which isn't changing the core DNA of how our economy is structured and how our relations and value creation together is truly made. A lot of our work in the impact area has been somewhat segmented and fragmented, you know, this business, and we'll do a decarbonization play, or we'll do a JEDI play, a justice, equity, diversity, inclusion play, or we will try for these one-offs. Well, any of those one-offs, decarbonization, climate change, these types of things, we're 6 of 9 planetary boundaries past critical phases. Taking a Newtonian one-off approach to any one of these issues is not going to do it. We have to start thinking systemically. We have to start doing that in a way that actually recognizes that it's not just out there that needs to change, it's in here. It's be the change, doing the deep work, unlearning some of our industrial schooling and mentalities of no fault, you know, of anyone's. We've all been doing our best as a society to try and evolve and do better. But ultimately to know that, you know, the scaffolding of industrialism, scientific rationality, enlightenment, which got us out of the dark ages, is now starting to crumble. And it really takes a different mindset and a different idea of what is the good life? What is enough? What is enough within planetary boundaries? And when you start to do that, you actually start to do some of the bigger work that I think we're trying to do here in Canada. You start to re-indigenize to place. You start to connect with people in place and community. You start to actually do reconciliation, not just the healing that needs to be done with our Indigenous communities, but like in right relation to people in place. How am I in right relation in not treating people as resources or in relationships as transactions, but in truly, you know, a higher value creation strategy. And that's big, deep work, which you can imagine traditional impact investors or LP partners, bringing them along on this journey with us is as important as the entrepreneurs and the businesses from, you know, how systemic and catalytic they can be as well.
Yeah. And it's refreshing to hear that. And I often will tell people when they kind of ask me about this podcast, like my one takeaway is that the entrepreneurs and the people that I meet and interview, they are so closely aligned to the mission and driven individuals that run nonprofits. And even though that they are for profits, I've never met a cohort in a group of people that are so aligned. It would be very hard to see the way that they think and the way that they want to operate their business and their kind of core mission. And so there is a new group of people out there, and they are obviously a an incredibly diverse group of people that I do believe in. And I think that these people and these entrepreneurs and founders and people being in these businesses have what it takes to make this kind of change and to allow business to be that force for good. When you think about 3, 5 years or 10 years down, what does success look like to the fund? You know, that could be from impact and profit or both or a combination. What do you look like down the road and where do you hope to be?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So I'll start by saying where we're at now. We have some big work to do in proving what it looks like to do a wider lens on value creation and regenerating these small, medium enterprises and their stakeholder ecosystems. And that's first and foremost the work ahead as we pick up these first businesses and work forward with this first cohort. To bring these investors along on an impact journey, which is emergent. You know, most impact investors come in and say, what's my return on capital? But also, what's my return on impact? How many folks are you going to be inclusive with, or what level of decarbonization, or what might like that look like? And we are very frank and say we have no idea. We don't know until we acquire the business. We don't know what the place-based essence of the business is. We don't know what the people-based essence of the business is. And they are going to decide a renewed purpose. And all of that will determine, you know, how they can be systemic catalysts towards the bigger impacts and change we need to see. And so to allow for that emergence, our fund has built in some really innovative impact-linked compensation and carry structures to say, hey, there's no way around this. We can't greenwash or regen-wash this. The vesting equity for our CEOs and residents will be dependent on them not only meeting traditional milestones and hurdles, but also in achieving the co-determined impacts that our LPAC, our limited partners, and our impact committees will help design and craft with them. And so that's the first big piece of work, is demonstrating this isn't a zero-sum game. It's not market rate returns or impact, but again, demonstrating that by taking a wider lens, there is more value and more abundance to be created. As we go forward, you know, originally we thought, maybe we'll just do this year on year. 5 entrepreneurs each year. We'll raise $25 million funds each year. To what end? And there's kind of 2 answers to that. You know, we've structured ourselves as a semi-permanent capital vehicle. So we're not incentivizing quick flips of any of these businesses. It's more of a Berkshire model of why would we sell? It takes 10 years to reach $100 million in sales, let alone that time frame really being needed to regenerate the DNA of these SMEs. Why would we be forced to liquidate a fund or try and flip? And so our investors are coming along that journey with us. Secondarily, we're starting to think about, you know, how might we run cohorts that are bioregional? And when I say bioregion, like bioregions, you and I are in the Cascadia bioregion, this area from like mid-Alaska to mid-California that has similar geology, similar geography, similar watersheds, fauna, flora, traditional peoples, and how they related to the environment. That's a good way for us to like determine how businesses can, you know, meet the thresholds and the carrying capacities of the environment around us. What if we start running a Cascadia cohort here? What if we start running a greater Toronto cohort in the Great Lakes region? And so how do these regenerative businesses feed into more regenerative bioregions? And instead of, you know, slicing up our economies as nation states, really truly aligning these economies with the actual nature states that exist on our planet. And so there's a lot of work to be done in feeding into those wider nested systems. But thankfully, there's a lot of work being done on bioregional finance facilities and wider bioregional strategies happening across North America and the world right now. And so it's a very hopeful and positive movement to what this looks like in a very different way than we've traditionally structured.
It's incredibly refreshing to hear the goals and the work that you're doing at Regenerative Capital Group, especially understanding the traditional investment, you know, strategy and vehicles and PE and companies and all that kind of sort. So thank you so much for diving into this with us. Where can listeners find out more information about Regenerative Capital Group or connect with you? What's the best ways?
Yeah, thank you for this conversation, Marco. Great questions, and thank you for this offer. So our website is www.regenerativecapitalgroup.com. Also pretty prolific on LinkedIn as our main platform connecting with our audiences. And anyone who wants to sign up on our website for our monthly newsletter and as well find out about when applications open up for our next cohorts, that they can sign up there as well. And I would just say anyone who's interested in either being an applicant for our next CEO residents, we want to hear from you. Anyone who's interested in selling a Canadian-based business of that SME size, 1 to 5 million in EBITDA, we want to hear from you. And anyone who's interested in becoming an impactful, systemic, regenerative investor in this fund or our next fund, we also want to hear from you. So thank you.
Awesome. We will absolutely have the notes and these links dropped in the show notes. And thank you again, Cordell, for joining us. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
A pleasure as always, Marco. Thank you.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. Cordell, that was a very fun conversation talking about Regenerative Capital Group. You mentioned during the show that nearly $2 trillion worth of business and assets are going to be sold over the next decade in Canada. Can that be a force for good? And what's the opportunity that you see for that massive asset class that's going to hopefully change hands, is my assumption?
Yeah, I think that's the $2 trillion question. Is this going to be more business as usual being handed over? Is this going to end up in the hands of traditional private equity or strategic buyers? Or is this the inflection point? This silver tsunami is our biggest opportunity to evolve the biggest component of our economy towards becoming regenerative, to supporting thriving economies, ecologies, and societies. And that's what we're out to prove.
Thanks so much for tuning into the episode of Someone Like You. We hope you found our discussions today really insightful. Next week, we'll dive into another entrepreneur founder building a business in climate, so stay tuned. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. It really, really helps us out. Follow us on LinkedIn, where we also post really great videos from this episode. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.